Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 10th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, an interview with Jack McAuliffe, founder of New Albion Brewery. Jack is a true pioneer in the history of craft brewing. New Albion existed for only a short period of time, from 1976 to 1982. But despite its short lifetime, Jack's brewery has been called the most important failed brewery in the industry's history. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our 2012 Brewers Logbooks are still in stock. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us first and click on our associate link. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores, and you can find the Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app, too. Don't forget that the data form for the current Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment is online and active. You can find it at basicbrewing.com/experiment. We're testing how transferring your beer to a secondary fermenter impacts your beer over simply letting the beer sit in the primary for the duration. I've completed two batches in connection with the experiment, and I've got some very interesting results. The deadline for submitting your data is May 21st, so I'm looking forward to reading what you find out with your experiments. More good news on the homebrew legalization front in Alabama. If you'll remember, the Alabama House passed the bill that would make homebrewing legal, and now the American Homebrewer Association reports that the Senate Job Creation and Economic Development Committee passed House Bill 354 favorably on Tuesday, May 8th, after the bill was reassigned from the Small Business Committee. The bill must now be voted on by the full Senate in order to go to the governor for signing. The Senate just has 3 days of this session in which the bill can be heard, so if it's not brought to a vote, it will die with the end of this year's legislative session, and they'll have to start all over again next time. So, if you live in Alabama, as soon as you hear this, contact your state senator to support House Bill 354 to legalize home brewing in your state. Good luck, everybody. Okay, now let's get right into the meat of the matter, because I'm really excited about the show this week. A few weeks ago, Andy Sparks forwarded me an email that made my jaw drop. It was from Jack's sister, Kathy, saying that her brother had moved into the area and they were looking into what was going on with homebrewing in Northwest Arkansas. Well, I wrote an email to Maureen Ogle, author of Ambitious Brew, The Story of American Beer, to let her know of the news. And turns out she's friends with Kathy and Jack. So she said I could use her as a reference if I needed to, to make sure I was on the up and up when I contacted them. So many thanks to Maureen, and buy her book. It's a really good one, by the way, and listen to the interview that I did with her a few years back. Anyway, long story short, I met Jack and Kathy at Tanglewood Branch in Fayetteville as J.T. Wampler was serving up the first of the beers that he brewed, which were delicious, by the way. And turns out Jack and Kathy live about 15 minutes from my house. Jack is a true pioneer. His New Albion Brewery in Sonoma, California, broke the rules of commercial brewing at the time and wrote new ones, essentially. Jack started from scratch, using his engineering knowledge, his background as a home brewer, and a skill that may be disappearing today, researching old brewing books. With limited resources, Jack built a brewery that was the inspiration for what we now know today as craft brewing. Would the craft beer industry exist today without the seed that Jack planted back then? Well, maybe. But who knows how long it would have taken if Jack hadn't made that first step. In the end, New Albion was short-lived, but we're enjoying the long-lasting results of its founding today. Now, just a note to parents, Jack did let a couple of expletives slip, but nothing too bad. He was a sailor, after all. Well, Jack McAuliffe, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Why, thank you.
And welcome to Northwest. Welcome to Northwest Arkansas.
Thanks again. I like it here.
you were in San Antonio. Now you've moved up here.
That's correct. Yeah.
You've moved up with your sister, and you're going to be building a home up here.
Yes, that's correct. Actually, that's a cottage and work space, workshop. You know.
Now, Maureen Ogle calls your brewery, New Albion Brewery, the most important failed brewery in the craft beer industry's history.
Well, I think in brewing history, not just the craft brewing history, I'm familiar with the quote.
It's kind of a backhanded compliment, don't you think?
I don't know. It makes sense to me since, you know, I've come to realize the position that the New Albion Brewing Company has played in, you know, modern American brewing history. It's where people basically saw themselves, at the time there was only large breweries extant, and there was the Anchor Brewing Company in San Francisco, but that is, you know, a completely different entity from the large breweries. And from what I did is I showed it was possible to actually, you know, build your own brewery, build your own brewing equipment, and start from the ground up a commercial brewery. And that's what she means by that, I believe. And that's, you know, the way I see it.
Yeah, it's what the corporate people call a paradigm shift.
Yeah, I reckon. Now, also, when I started, there was something like, I don't know, 29 brewing companies in the United States, and today there's over 1,500, between 1,500 and 2,000 and growing. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, you started something.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back a little ways. Where did you discover a love of good beer?
I'd always liked beer. I was in the Navy, stationed at Scotland, and I liked the beer there. And I also discovered, you know, they would, since Europe was very close, there was a lot of imported beer in the stores in Scotland. By import, you know, it means across a little bit of water, not, you know, halfway around the world. And those beers were really, really good too, of course, because they didn't have to be stripped of all their flavors and proteins and that, because the shelf life, they weren't shipped for 2,000 or 3,000 miles like was it happens in the United States. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's why one of the reasons that American beers are so light, in because they travel long distances and require, you know, a substantial shelf life capability. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they didn't have to deal with that. So I became familiar with a broad palette of beer flavors. So.
And what were your favorites at the time?
Oh, I can't remember. I always liked, you know, I always ordered a pint of heavy at the local pub in Scotland. I lived out in a little place called Strone. I was stationed at the Holy Loch in Scotland. And fortunately, just two doors away in this little village, there was a pub. And I, you know, just walk over there. It's like living in San Francisco. There's two bars on every corner.
And the philosophy of drinking, or the culture of drinking over there, is quite different from what was going on over here in the United States.
Yes, it's mostly done at the pub and that sort of thing. It's a public house. Public, it's like the social living room of, you know, your neighborhood, mm-hmm. much as it is in San Francisco today too.
So you discovered this good beer, uh-huh. and you came back to the United States, and what did you find?
At that time, like in the early 70s, high-end on-sale businesses were beginning to distribute a lot of imports. Mm. And although I tried them and recognized they were much less flavorful than the ones, the same brands in Europe, because of the shelf life and travel requirements. And people, and also that was at, you know, when wine was becoming pop. I was living in California at the time, Northern California. Wine was becoming real popular. Small wineries, a California cuisine was coming into being, all that sort of stuff. So I thought, you know, a real live, you know, traditional brewery with something that's entirely different from American beers. And I was familiar with ales since I'd been stationed in Scotland. So I thought, and I was a home brewer, mm-hmm. of course, and so that's what I decided to do. And that's how and why.
So what was the state of home brewing at that time? I mean, what were ingredients available, or?
Home brewing in the United States had just recently been made federally legal, and the same thing happened in Great Britain when I was there, and there was the what is that movement? I remember.
Campaign for Real Ale?
Yeah, Camara. And I was in Glasgow doing something, fiddling around, and da-da-da-da-da. And I was in Booth, the chemist, and I saw a homebrew kit. I said, man, I got to try that. And there was Dave Lyons, a big book of brewing and everything. So that's where I began homebrewing in Scotland when I was in the Navy. And because I thought to myself, you know, when I get back to the United States, I'm not going to have access to beers that taste like this. So by the powers, I better learn to make them, which I did.
And you're an engineer. Your background is being an engineer. And so that had to appeal to you as well, the gadget side of things.
Oh, yeah. Heating and cooling, pumping, and, you know, all the brewing is very mechanical. As I say, you know, farmers make wine and engineers make a beer and spirits.
So you're in California, and this is the mid-70s. What got it into your mind that you could start your own brewery from scratch? I mean, the reason that your brewery, New Albion, is important to the history of the brewing industry is that you came up with this seed, this idea that you, the lowly home brewer, could, try to get in the market with all these big guys. I mean, what was the inspiration?
Well, first of all, I wasn't going to compete with the big guys. It was an entirely different product, not available in the United States. Secondly, you know, a home brewing outfit, making it from grain, is just a miniature version of any brewery. I mean, they all do the same thing. Anyway, I've been employed in Silicon Valley as an optical engineer, and I got tired of living there. It was crazy down there. And I helped a friend build a large custom design pole house up in the town outside of Sonoma. And I learned how to build a house there. There were two other real craftsman type carpenters that I learned home construction, framing, finishing. And I did that, and I did all the plumbing and all the wiring and that sort of stuff. So I knew how to construct, how to build things. And so I had those skills. I was a welder, having apprenticed myself at a welding shop in high school after a brutal summer of physical labor work. You know, I decided I need some skills. So I apprenticed myself to this welding shop in high school and learned to weld. So I could do that, do the metalworking. And with those sorts of skills, and I bought myself a microscope, bought older books on breweries and brewing and microbiology from the 1800s, and those were the sorts of techniques and stuff that I used to build the New Albion Brewing Company. You know, we had, you know, a professional microbiological lab for control there, and it was just a small, real brewery, I reckon you could say.
So you started, I mean, you had to go back that far to the 1800s to get the textbooks and things? I mean, was there not more recent research available for you?
Well, that was all modern sort of stuff. The techniques and that sort of stuff that I was going to be using for this brewery were older techniques, like not, you know, how do we get all of the protein out of the beer? I wasn't interested in that. You know, modern microbiology deals much more with electronic equipment and that sort of thing. And that, of course, was beyond my financial reach. So, you know, what I got skilled with was, 1,000 power optical microscope, an alcohol flame, and a loupe, and petri dishes, and, you know, just regular old-timey. And I got these are antiquarian books. I had purchased a copy of Pasteur's Etudes sur la Bière, Studies on Beer. It's English translation. I don't know what it was called. Anyway, a monograph of his research on in explaining to brewers why their beer didn't turn out right sometimes. And of course, it's microbiology. Anyway, that right, Mandy?
We're surrounded by loving animals. Yeah. So in a sense, I mean, did you feel that that technology had kind of stripped all the life out of beer at that point? And did you feel like you were kind of stepping back to find the qualities that you enjoyed?
I guess you could say it like that. That is to say, I mean, that's the result of it, but that's not why I did it. I did it because those sorts of techniques those are the techniques that home brewers use. And to move into the highly processed field of brewing it's enormously expensive to do that. The technology required. So that's basically why.
It's the entry level point.
That's correct. And of course, it's, you know, nowadays it's called artisan or craft brewing, which is, you know, like a, you know, it's that sort of brewing and not high-tech brewing.
Right. So how did you get started? I mean, you had business partners at the time, right?
Yes. Found a few, you know, people thought it was interesting, local investors. We started off with $3,000 of initial capital.
which is chicken feed today.
Right. That was when, 1,000 board feet was $240.
So you had your investors. Now talk about the brew house, what you built for your brew house.
Okay, what I did is I welded up a steel structure and built a traditional gravity flow brewery that is today, of course, a modern brewery. Everything is on the same level, and you pump from here to there and that sort of thing. Well, pumps are expensive. And in the old days, breweries were gravity flow. You put your cold water at the top. Okay, that's where you start. And you would mix your calcium sulfate in there, to adjust the chemical composition of the beer. Then from there it would flow by gravity down to the hot back, where you would heat it in preparation for mashing. Below that would be the mash tun. The hot water, the hot liquor at that time, would flow to the mash tun and be mashed in with the grain. From there, it would flow down to the brew kettle, where it would be fired and boiled. And then from there, it would flow to the hot water receiver and then be pumped to the fermenting cellar. So it all would cascade. So I built this tower, two-story high, 20. It was in a warehouse, so I used the peak area where the peak was, and I built steel I-beams that go up and cross beams, welded it all together, and fabricated the vessels from 55-gallon stainless steel barrels that I would cut and weld up and put fittings on and that sort of thing as required. What they were was surplus Pepsi Cola syrup, 55-gallon drums. That was when the syrup was distributed to the bottlers, not in bulk, but in 55-gallon barrels. They'd recently switched to bulk, so they had all these 55-gallon drums to sell off. And I bought, I don't know how many, every vessel I had in the brewery was made out of them. I bought them from Wine and the People in Berkeley, where Byron Birch worked. After that, he started a home brew, really successful retail business called The Beverage People in Santa Rosa, California. Anyway, that's where I bought these, because they had purchased them. Or maybe he directed me to somebody who had them. I can't recall, because that's been a long time ago. Anyway, so that's what I used to make the brew house and the fermenters. And, five primary fermenters, I believe, and 10 secondaries, because it would ferment for a week about in the primaries and be transferred to the secondaries for 2 weeks, and then we would bottle it.
What was your capacity at the time?
The brewery we did is our capacity was 450 barrels a year, and this is at the time when Anheuser-Busch was building their new brewery in Fairfield, California, and I believe the capacity of their brew kettle was 600 barrels, so it took us all year to brew basically about what they brewed in about 8 months. Excuse me.
Eight hours.
8 hours,
yeah.
Exactly. So that's the size of comparison of the brewery.
How did you go to market?
A brewer in California could self-distribute at that time. So that's what I did. I, had my little hand cart and loaded it in the van and off I'd go.
And at one point were you living at the brewery? Is that right?
Oh, yes. I built a little, living quarters above it. Yeah.
And at first it was just you working in the brewery, right?
Well, actually there was three of us ran the brewery. Me, Susie Stern, and Jane Zimmerman. Jane Zimmerman left after about, I don't know, 6 months, and Susie Stern and I worked there for probably, she was there for maybe 3-4 years. And oh, we hired some people. We started, you know, brewery grew, and capacity output grew, so we could hire someone to run the, to help out in the cellars and that sort of thing. And of course we needed, I think we had hired three people every, we bottled on Wednesdays. Mm. Once a week we'd bottle. So we needed people for that. So that's it.
And where did Don Barkley come into it?
I had become acquainted with Michael Lewis, who he started the first academic brewing program in the United States at University of California, Davis, which is the so-called ag school. Mm. It's a far, far stretch from the old ag schools. Anyway, there was a meeting of some sort over there with him and people who ran breweries. One of the Coors boys was there. And he was starting a brewing program in Don. So, you know, we'd go back and forth. And that's where I first found these antiquarian books in the Davis Library. And I'd go out to all the antiquarian books around the Bay Area and look for brewing books, and found some, of course. Anyway, what we would do is we'd say, they'd come over for tours. Dr. Lewis would bring his students over for tours and that sort of thing. And then decide, you know, in the summertime we would have an apprenticeship program and get one of the students to come over who volunteered. They're unpaid, but they learn how to run the brewery, real hands-on sort of thing, the whole shebang. I had them, you know, and these students, you know, did everything, enter all the federal records and do the taxes and everything, completely acquainted with the operation of a brewery.
And Don was one of those?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Now, according to Maureen Ogle's book, the first time Don came to the brewery to ask to work for you, according to Maureen's account, you didn't exactly welcome him with open arms.
That is a communist lie. I don't recall it like that, but who knows? There was probably some, you know, catastrophic emergency happening at the time, you know, that I just couldn't deal with. You know, something happened. The words go all over the floor. You know.
It's a more fun story, though, told that way.
Yeah, I reckon. I've heard it quite often.
It's more fun. It's more fun to tell the story that he came to ask to work for free, and you told him to get out.
You have to pay me.
Now, you said that some people were attracting attention from, you know, people in the brewery program at Davis, some of the people that came over, Ken Grossman of Sierra Nevada was one, I guess.
At that time, as I recall, Ken was running a homebrew store in Chico, California.
Okay, all right.
All right, and he came by, and he has told me when he saw the brewery, he was a home brewer too, and he had the same skill set that I have, as far as making stuff and, you know, building, and, you know, machine shop and welding and anyway. So he said to himself, "My word, this is nothing more than a great big homebrew outfit. Which, of course, it was. Every brewery is just a great big homebrew outfit.
Right.
Anyway, and he said, I can do this.
And he did.
He did, by the power.
And he's
done it really well. Yeah. Have you seen his brewery?
No, but
man, you got to go.
I've sampled the results.
Well, you got to go check out the actual brewery. He's really done it right.
And they're opening another one on the East Coast, I think.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's right. If not, I'll cut that out.
Call Ken. You want his phone number?
So you were having an influence. I mean, you were. It's that paradigm shift that I mentioned earlier.
Evidently. I thought, you know, man, this is my field. Get out of here. If you want to do it somewhere out of California, you know.
So you weren't in the sharing mood at that time.
Well, of course not. No one in business is. You know, it's unarmed combat,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And what kind of beers were you making? I guess we should talk about that.
We made ale, porter, and stout. And at that time, we were also making a keg beer ale that was lighter than our bottle ale. California rules at that time is that the distinction between beer and ale in California is the amount of alcohol by weight, mm-hmm. not volume as they use now. It had to beer could be called beer only if it was less than 4% by weight. Anything over 4% or over had to be, or over 4%, you could call it ale, porter, mm-hmm. or stout. And bulk beer sold in kegged beer had to be beer. You couldn't sell, you know, 5% ale in a draft.
Ah.
So we made a light ale for draft purposes.
It's funny how laws shape beers over time.
Yes.
So you were also making a barley wine as well, weren't you? Or?
That was an occasional beer that we made for our summer solstice party. Eventually, it came to be called Old Toe Sucker. you want to hear the story, but I'll tell you the story, but you can't. I'll tell you later.
Okay. Right. But were you getting, as they say, traction in the marketplace?
Well, we certainly sold all we could make. That's there's no two ways about that. Or all we didn't drink, we sold.
So what was the next step? I mean, why? Talk about the evolution of the company. I mean, what was the arc? I mean, why isn't there a New Albion today?
Okay, we started in 1976. By 80, you know, I had spent, you know, 7 days a week at the brewery every day. And with that small of a volume, you know, we had to get bigger. And there was room, I'll tell you, there was a lot of room in the marketplace for that, you know. Anyway, as Ken Grossman will tell you. And this was at the time when Jimmy Carter was president, and when the inflation rate was up around 15%, T-bills, you know, today you're lucky if there's some people that actually give the Treasury money on their T-bills because they have to put their money someplace, and the interest rate now is about zip point shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then the interest rate was 15. T-bills were going for 18%. You know, all of the money, investment money, flowed to T-bills. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're crazy not to do that. And, you know, I did not know what was, well, you know, that's looking back and seeing, and then we put together a business plan and put all of our money, you know, it's you know, making a bet, you know, all of our money went to financing this great leap forward. It's a bet that entrepreneurs make. I can get funded before I run out of money. It's a race. Well, we didn't get one single investor when we floated the plan. Not one. Because a brewery is a really low rate of return investment. You know, that's why all of the small breweries that are now popping up to do this stuff are, you know, owned by the initial investors. You know, well, in today's environment, you might be able to attract, investors. But it's not like, you know, when computers first came out, or it's like, you know, like, let's build us a car factory, make some money. You're out of your mind. Look at what's his name? DeLorean. Yeah, yeah. You know, you can't do that.
So there was no money, and eventually
we ran out. It was a bet. You know, we had this much money, you know, reserve. We bet if we spend it all, take us, you know, 6-8 months to spend it all, try to do all this new development stuff. And if the investment didn't come in at that time, we were out of money, man. We were broke. Mm. So that's what happened.
So after that, you what happened? Where'd you go?
I became involved in the control and automation industry. That's the sort of stuff I've done ever since then.
So you got a real job.
I got a real job. Yeah. I was programmable logic controllers, that sort of PLCs.
So as you sort of saw the fruits of your initial seed that you planted being harvested by other people across the country and around the world with the new, you know, wave of these smaller craft breweries. What'd you think about that?
Well, from my background and understanding, you know, the finances of how things worked and that sort of stuff, you know, of course I wished them all the best of luck, you know. Hey, go for it, dude.
And at least you get to sample the good beers that come out of it, though.
Yeah, fortunately, I can walk into most any brewery and introduce myself, and they say, well, come right in. Mm. Do you like a beer?
Well, that's good. It's like George Washington, founder of the industry, walking into the place.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good that you're getting recognition. You've now moved to Northwest Arkansas, where you know, a little late, but we're finally catching on to this thing.
Yes.
It's an interesting coincidence that you should move here at this time, because as you know, I mean, we met the other night at Tanglewood Branch, which is, you know, we sampled some of the first beers served off their taps, and they're a handful of others that are either started production or about to start production.
People are plotting and scheming about them, yeah.
So what do you think about that?
Well, that's a wonderful thing, yeah. Give me more places to walk into.
So what advice would you give all of them and anybody else who's wanting to get into this thing?
Well, I'll quote Augustus Busch when John Murphy purchased the Miller Brewing Company and he said, well, you're welcome into the pool, but bring lots of money.
And there is a lot more competition nowadays. I mean, it's not, you know, when you and when Sierra Nevada came onto the market, you had a distinction in that you were different. You know, you were there's this new small brewery.
One of the things that happens now, primarily, I think, in Oregon and California, is people will take their vacation, and what they do is they go on, you know, the craft brewery trip of going to all the different brew pubs and that sort of thing. Yeah, that actually happens now.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that Northwest Arkansas is going to become one of those places.
It should be, yeah. There's no reason not to. The state ought to actually promote that because it provides jobs. It provides tax income to the state and the federal government, and it's a business that can, on a small scale, can make money, and people like it. You know, they go there.
Yeah.
They spend money there.
And at the same time, on the big brewery side, it seems like all of the American brewers are being bought by foreign interests. And even the, you know, the big American breweries like Anheuser-Busch are no longer owned by Americans. And the biggest American-owned brewery is apparently
a multinational.
But the biggest American-owned brewery is now Boston Beer Company, I think, Sam Adams.
I think it might be where there's some distinction about. The Sierra Nevada is up there. They're number six in the country now. Mm. I don't know where all the comparisons go and that sort of thing.
But I guess my point is that it has shifted the business atmosphere, or the environment has shifted a lot since you were.
Yes. I had no idea this would happen, of course. You know, my word. Now you can actually buy. There are people who manufacture brewing equipment for craft breweries. I remember, I read the brewing literature, the trade mags, and all that sort of stuff. And I would call these folks up, say, I'm looking for some brewing equipment. Here's what I'm planning to do, and that sort of thing. And they would say, "You're going to do what?" Mm-hmm. It was as if I had just arrived from Mars and I was speaking Martian to them. The only people they'd ever dealt with was these large breweries or regional breweries, you know. But it was they just basically could not comprehend what I was trying to do. It was beyond their ken. Anyway, so, and that, of course, is why I had to fabricate all the equipment myself, and, you know, from scratch.
Has there ever been a time when you thought, well, maybe I ought to try it again?
Not really. I'll quote Dr. Samuel Johnson on that question. It was he lived at Thrales Brewery in London. You know who Dr. Samuel Johnson is? He was a writer that he invented. He was the author of the first American or English dictionary, where he had things like the definition of a fishing pole is a rod with a string on it, with an angle on one end and a fool on the opposite. Anyway. He lived in the 1720, late 1600s, early 1700s, approximately during the Baroque era when Bach was alive and that sort of thing. Anyway, Thrale, a very large brewer in London, an ale brewer, had a large brewery, and Thrale put him up in his house because, you know, he was a literary type, didn't make any money. So he lived there for a while, and he was, Thrale died. And at the sale of Thrale's brewery in London, a big auction, and he addressed some of the crowd. He said, "Gentlemen, what we have here is not just a mere collection of vats and pipes, but a means to grow rich beyond the dreams of avarice." Anyway, so I thought I was going to make a shit pot full of money at this. So, to answer your question, no, I haven't thought about returning.
Well, Jack, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I once again welcome you to Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you.
I look forward to, I hope one day, spending some time around a brew pot with you.
Oh, yeah, we'll go out and paralyze Northwestern Arkansas.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Certainly. You're quite welcome.
Prepare to be paralyzed, Northwest Arkansas. Thanks again to Jack for the time. Man, I had a lot of fun. And I'm sure we only scratched the surface, and I look forward to talking to Jack again soon without the recorder so I can hear the good stuff. And thanks to Kathy and her husband John for the use of their kitchen table. And we definitely need to fire up the brew pot and the smoker soon. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits as well. You can find them all on our site along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is going out the door right now. We've got combo deals to save you a couple of bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Kickerland Design Invisible Playing Cards. How do you know when they come? How do you know when they arrive? And American Gala Oak Case Musical Motion Clock by Rhythm Clocks. Wow. It's quite the gadget. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine and or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.